Hello again, everyone. Kirk Semenoff, editor of the Business Journal, and welcome to episode 361 of the Biz Talk with the Wichita Business Journal podcast. We created this podcast 7 years ago because we wanted to provide you with some insight into the people, places, companies, organizations, and issues that are important to Wichita's business community. I think it's safe to say that there's a different vibe in Wichita when the Wichita State men's basketball team is on a roll. That was sure the case from about 2012 to 2018 with the Final Four appearance in there and some deep NCAA tournament runs. But college basketball success in the 20s is largely dependent now on success in the transfer portal and in name, image, likeness revenue. And with NIL changing seemingly weekly, with state legislatures making their own rules and the NCAA largely powerless to legislate its members, NIL is becoming a version of the Wild West, though maybe not as wild as social media leads us to believe. Kevin Saul, Wichita State's athletic director, joins me in episode 361 to talk about NIL and what it means for the Shockers in all of their 16 sports, but especially men's basketball, as first-year coach Paul Mills tries to keep his players here for his second season while bringing in more. That's the new reality of Division I hoops and football today. Kevin joins me in just a minute. But first, here's a look at what's in the weekly edition of the WBJ. We sent managing editor Shelby Kellerman to Phoenix a few weeks ago, and all we got was this t-shirt and a fantastic cover story in this week's paper. She was in Phoenix to tour and find out about the Phoenix Bioscience Core, which is what the planned Wichita Biomedical Campus aspires to be over the next few years and decades. Wichita State President Rick Muma has toured the facilities in Phoenix 3 times with other Wichita and KU leaders, and Shelby brings back a story of how Phoenix planned and executed its bioscience campus. Her dispatch from the Valley of the Sun begins on page 12. 3 lists are in this week's paper: electrical contractors, mechanical contractors, and Wichita area home values by zip code. That's a lot to sift through for readers, especially the zip code list that shows not only 2023 values in our area, but 2022. And you will see that not all values rose by the same percentage. All 3 lists begin on page 7. Part of our mission is to help small and medium-sized businesses grow. One way we try to accomplish that is through our weekly lead section. We list bankruptcies, new real estate deals, building permits, new corporations, who owes back taxes, and new lawsuits. Our lead section this week begins on page 29. Equity Bank means business. That's why they've created business solutions to help you solve your business challenges. Visit them today at equitybank.com. Kevin Saul joins me on this week's podcast. Of course, he's the athletic director at Wichita State University, coming up on his second anniversary in the athletic department in Wichita. Kevin, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Kirk, enjoy being on the show. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
We're going to talk name, image, likeness an awful lot. And I thought, boy, this is the third podcast we've done on name, image, likeness, one with Timber Lee and one with Matt Beatty. Are we doing too much on it? It changes every day, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't think you can do too much, because at the end of the day, we're talking about a subject that has changed dramatically. You know, the things that we're able to do now, we've been educating and encouraging and monitoring the compliance in over the last 40 years. These are things that we haven't been able to do the last 40 years. And so we've been educating our fan base, hey, you can't do this for 40 years. And now all of a sudden we can do this. So we're trying to unravel 40 years of education and training.
You have to, being in on it, you know what's going on every day, or you try to know what's going on every day. But when fans, when boosters come to you, do you have to just kind of speak slowly and say, this is what the new reality is?
Yeah, I think to give you a little bit of context and history, so NIL started in July of 21. Mm-hmm. That's when the legislation changed. And I was at Murray State at the time. And at that point in time, we were trying to prop up a collective. We were doing the education, the infrastructure pieces. There's really 2 main companies out there. It's Influencer and Open Doors. Mm-hmm. And simply what they do is they create an online marketplace where your student athletes can put a portal, mm-hmm. Can put a where they can put their, it's an online platform where the student athletes can create a spot to connect with the business community, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the critical elements of that. So we spent the first year at Murray State doing that. And I got here in July of 22, and you know the history. Mm-hmm. It just, we weren't going to touch NIL here. We were against it. We didn't want anything to do with it. And I'm not making a value statement, but then at the end of the day, we were a year behind when right. I walked in July of 22. Now, it's probably not fair to say a full year behind because Tyler, Timber, Matt, those guys had started Armchair Strategies, which was the right thing to do, mm-hmm. And had been raising some dollars, but not anything specific yet or significant because there wasn't a relationship with the athletics department, which is right. critical. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we get here July of 22 and walk in the door and say, okay, hey, where we are on NIL. And it's like, holy smokes, we got basically rinse and repeat what we just did at Murray State.
Right.
Okay, so we put a letter out, and you can find it on goshockers.com/NIL. It's too long. But it's the history of NIL, what it is, what it isn't. It lives on our website in perpetuity, just to get you the background information. Mm-hmm. And then we started to set up the infrastructure, and we choose to go with Open Doors. So each student athlete has a portal online. It's the Shocker Marketplace, where businesses can go in and actually propose NIL deals. So right. now there was a connection that we created there. And then the education piece, and I can tell you from July of 22 through December, there wasn't a conversation we had publicly, privately, individually, collectively that didn't cover NIL. Mm-hmm. And we didn't raise the first significant NIL gifts until January 6th of 23.
What do you mean by significant gifts?
We had individuals step forward, multiple individuals step forward with commitments to five figures a year for 3+ years.
So essentially, you were at a year and a half behind.
We were, well, I would tell you that.
You were laying the groundwork in
22. We were laying the groundwork in 22 that should have been laid in 21. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, I look at it as we were behind. We mm-hmm. were a year behind. And so we started raising those dollars, and the collective had the ability to distribute, I think it was either $320,000 last year in men's basketball, which is good considering we were at nearly nothing nine months before that. But those distributions aren't getting any smaller, and the competitive landscape is such that we're going to need to grow. So Open Doors, the company that we have that tracks and logs all the NIL throughout the country that goes through Open Doors. They are projecting that an average American Athletic Conference men's basketball team will be at 500,000 this mm-hmm. coming season. So for us to be able to go from 320, 340 up to 500,000, and listen, we want championships at Wichita State, and I firmly believe you have to align resources to expectations. So we can shoot for the 500, and that will put us at average. And in my opinion, when we're resourcing our programs, whether that's travel, recruiting, gear, whatever it is, we don't need to be the nicest house in the neighborhood. We don't need to be number one. But we need to be in the top third mm-hmm. If we expect to win championships. So I think the same for NIL. So we're shooting for that 700 to 800 range for this next season.
Are things, when we read and hear NIL stories, are they as crazy as we think they are?
Well, I think the problem with where we are right now is the lack of transparency in the data. And as much as we don't want to hear this, there are wrongdoers in the industry. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of coaches, administrators that are telling kids whatever it takes for them to hear to go to their place, because there's no codified agreements. So that's one of the transparency right. elements. There needs to be an agreement that's signed between an institution and a young person for what they're committing to. We have institutions in our region. We have institutions in our league that are telling kids whatever it takes. And I have heard it specifically. You tell these young people whatever it takes to get them to this institution, and we'll clean up the relationship when they get there. So put that in the context of what you're hearing in the media may not be accurate and likely isn't accurate. And so we don't know. So it's almost like we're chasing something we can't catch because we don't know that what we're hearing in the media is valid. What we do know is that through Open Doors, we have data that we understand what basketball programs are doing across the country, within the American Athletic Conference, within every Division I conference. We have a summary. We understand what they're doing at the D2 level. So that, to me, is the most credible data. I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock in these outlandish stories that you hear in the media, because at the end of the day, institutions are competing to get elite level talent, and they will do just about anything to get there.
I want to point out, I think it's more social media than actual media. I'd like to think that we in the media are still being responsible and only reporting but social media is just a war zone of facts and what we think are facts.
Here's what my take on social media, for those that care, is we work in an industry that is founded on passion and emotion, right? I mean, that's what drives it. And social media is, first off, I think that if you're going to build programs effectively, you've got to do it methodically. You've got to do it right down the middle. There's got to be a thoughtfulness to it. So I subscribe to kind of right down the middle. And the last thing that you're going to get on social media is right down the middle. You know, you're going to get the extreme ends of the spectrum. You're going to get the contrast. And with our industry, passion and emotion, boy, it can go all over the place. And so I think it's important to pay attention to social media. But I think if you live there, it can be a really lonely existence because there's just no accountability. Right. It can be incredibly toxic. I think it is one of the major stressors for our young people in our program. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that I don't know, because all those conversations are kept confidential. But I do know at a high level that the mental health of our student athletes is impacted significantly by social media.
I can believe that. As an athletic director, one of your new roles for any athletic director is talking to your coaches about how you mix NIL into the recruiting process. What are you telling your coaches?
Well, I think it's more collaborative than the AD telling the coaches anything. I think it's really asking our coaches, what are you seeing and hearing in the recruiting landscape? What are you running up against? How can we help remove obstacles for you? And so those are all the conversations that happen as you're building what you consider to be a higher order solution. And so we talk about, and we can walk through the history of armchair strategies, connecting with Blueprint Sports to now become the Wheat Shot Collective. But we've established a goal with the Wheat Shot Collective, and it's not an arbitrary goal. It's a goal that we understand through the transparency of the data that we can get, the conversations with our coaches, where are we trying to get to? Mm-hmm. And we're trying to get to $2.5 million in NIL distributions per year for all 15, 16 of our sports. And that's built on the data that we can get. So we feel like we need to be in that $750,000 to $1 million range for men's basketball to be competitive
right.
in the top third. We feel like softball and baseball need to be in that $200,000 to $250,000 range. We feel like volleyball needs to be in that $100,000 range. We feel like women's basketball is probably going to be in that $300,000 to $400,000 range. And so when you aggregate all of those together, that's how you get to the 2.5. And so when we start thinking about how do we get to 2.5? Because it's not dollars that the athletics department can collect and distribute. It has to come from external sources through the collective to the student athletes. And so we started the Seed Sowers campaign.
Go ahead. That's 5,000. You're looking for 5,000 donors, 5,000 boosters to give $500 annually. That's 2.5.
That's right. And again, we have 110,000 living alumni at Wichita State University. And so we felt like the number of 5,000 was fairly reasonable. That's a big number. But over 110,000 living alumni, it's less than 5% of our living alumni. Can we get $500 a year? It's not a small amount. It's $42 a month, so it's a little over a dollar a day. But that generates $2.5 million that will put us in a very competitive landscape for our teams to win American Athletic Conference championships.
Let's talk about that landscape that is ever changing. You know, in the state of Virginia this week, the governor is going to sign a bill that allows NIL to come within the athletic departments for every state or not just a state institution, but every college within the state of Virginia. Oklahoma, Mississippi, you're among other states doing that, and some other states have already done it. Talk about what Kansas is doing within the legislature, if anything, to address this, and what would you like to see them do?
Well, I'm going to leave the government relations things up to our president's office and you know, Andy Schlapp and Zach Gearhart. They do a phenomenal job with that, and obviously the Wildcats and the Jayhawks are going to have some strong opinions there as well. I think what I would like to see is the ability for us to remain competitive in the landscape. So what does that mean? I think at the end of the day, whether it's 6 months from now or 6 years from now, the athletic departments will have greater autonomy within the NIL space. Mm-hmm. What I think remains to be solved is the problem of designating your student athletes. So at some point, none of us would be surprised to see at some point that there's a line item in the budget for NIL, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And just like there's a line item in the budget for scholarships or travel or whatever the case may be. And then you can allocate that $2.5 million throughout your different budget lines, and they're actually in your sport budgets. And hey, okay, coach, here's what you have to spend on NIL this year. The problem that remains is, what mechanism are you using to transition the dollars from athletics to students? And that's where the employee conversation mm-hmm. comes in. Are they independent contractors? Are they employees? And if we dove into the employee conversation, which we can, because I think it's a fascinating conversation, we engaged our student athlete advisory committee on the employee conversation. It doesn't paint a pretty picture for student athletes in general, for opportunities throughout the country for young people to get their degrees. We are the largest grant and aids program next to the GI Bill. So we have 50% first generation college students at Wichita State that are coming here that wouldn't be able to afford it without the scholarships, and they're getting degrees and doing something that's never been done before in their family. There would be detrimental impacts to that if they were made employees, and I can walk through the why of that. So it's a really interesting, I think, our state understanding the landscape, making sure that we have the flexibility and the autonomy to remain successful, to remain competitive. That's really the critical piece. It is an unbelievable time in college athletics now. I'm staring at a slide right now. There's 40 active legal cases, whether it's in federal courts or state courts, that involve the NCAA. And it's a really untenable time in our industry. And so we've got to calm that down and quiet those waters.
As an athletic director, I would think that you could just get lost in all of those cases. But how do you get your information, and how do you decide how to veer forward?
Yeah, I just, you know, this, it's a similar conversation. We talk about like conference realignment. Mm-hmm. Folks want to know, is that priority 1A? Yeah. Okay. It's priority 1A. Our budget's priority 1B. Our NIL is priority 1C. Everything is the top priority. Staying educated on ongoing NCAA litigation is really important to do, because I have to be able to sit down with our government leaders, our president, our university leaders, and say, hey, here's what's happening in the industry, and here's the decision points that I think are coming for athletics. So we try to stay ahead of it as best we can, and be as proactive as we can. At the end of the day, we're guided by our mission, which is to develop young people and programs through first-class service to our coaches, our student athletes, and Shocker Nation. That's it. Mm-hmm. We're going to develop young people and programs, and we're going to try and do it in a first-class way. So we pay attention to anything and everything that impacts that mission, and it's very broad.
You say 2.5 million is a goal. What for 23-24? What was your NIL total?
If the collective was able to distribute for men's basketball in that 320 to 340 range, we were north of 400.
Okay.
Because there was a little bit for softball, there was a little bit for baseball, there was a little bit for volleyball. So it was probably just a little north of 400.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, you know, we're gonna need to get better. And I think what's interesting about the NIL discussion is, and I say this somewhat in jest, but Jennifer and I will be celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary this summer. And I remember the week that we got married, my dad said, look, you can be happy or right, correct, in marriage, but you can't be both all the time. And I think about that, and he's absolutely right. I've got the best wife in the world, and she's unbelievable. But I think about that dynamic with NIL in all seriousness. We can want championships at Wichita State, and we do. We have a history and tradition. There's Commissioner's Cups stacked on top of Commissioner's Cups stacked on top of Commissioner's Cups in Coke Arena when we were in the Missouri Valley Conference.
Mm-hmm.
In 2015-16, on 15 sports, we won 9 MVC championships in 15-16. You know what? We've won 9 since we've entered the AAC in 17-18. That's normal. We're entering a more competitive, a more expensive landscape. I applaud Wichita State for doing that because you create a pathway where your programs can grow,
mm-hmm.
where you can develop young people and programs.
Yeah.
I think that's really good. At the same time, we won all those championships. For 40 years, we've been telling people you can't do this from an NIL perspective. And the transactional components of NIL, I think, turn people off. And the churn that you see in rosters from year to year, I think, turn people off. There's 2,000 men's basketball players in the portal right now. There's 350 Kirk Division I programs. So if you do that math, that's like 6 or 7 kids per roster that are leaving. Well,
yeah.
You only have 15 or 16, right?
Yeah.
And that doesn't count the kids that are graduating and moving on. So you might have half your roster turning over every single year. So now put that into context in terms of what Paul's been able to do with keeping Xavier Bell, Bijan, Quincy Ballard,
mm-hmm.
Harlan Beverly, to keeping those guys, Joy. That's good in today's world. So I guess my point is that we can want the championships, and we all do. We are 100% aligned. We want American Athletic Conference championships. We want to go to the NCAA tournament. We want deep runs in the tournament. We can also be adamantly opposed to NIL and not like all those things.
Mm-hmm.
But those two pieces can't live in the same space.
Right.
They won't live in the same space,
no.
Not in today's environment.
You just can't afford to, yeah. I talked with a booster who was at a meeting with among others, you and Paul Mills, where he told me that Paul basically got up and said, we need you people. We need you top boosters to come through for us in the NIL landscape. Can you talk about, you know, just generally what happened in that meeting and what kind of reaction did you get?
Yeah, so we felt like, obviously, in season is a real grind for our coaches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they put about 120 man hours into scouting and prepping for every single game throughout the staff. So it's difficult to get the community engagement piece that you want in season.
Mm-hmm.
But once we got to postseason, Coach Mills and I talked about a really detailed plan, a definitive plan to engage in the community, and that event was one of the things that we wanted to do. And so we got together in the Champions Club. I think we had between 90 and 100 donors, season ticket holders, supporters. And the idea was let's just some fellowship over dinner, give folks an opportunity to engage with Coach Mills, which they haven't been able to do over the season. But then we spent the last probably 30 or 40 minutes with Paul Solentrop, your buddy. And Paul walked us through kind of an informal panel discussion with some interview questions, and then we opened it up to Q&A. And so it was really an opportunity for us to engage with those folks, reinforce and double down on the importance of NIL, and yes, to ask for help. And let's be transparent here. The challenge is we have seen some folks that have transitioned their private support from supporting annual operating and or scholarships for the Shockers, and they're transitioning it into NIL. Well, there's too much of that We're going to struggle to pay our scholarship bill. We're going to struggle to pay our annual operating. So we've always positioned this as respectfully asking for NIL that's above and beyond what you're already doing. And at the end of the day, if you're going to prioritize, we Wichita State is solvent financially when we have 6,000 to 8,000 season ticket holders in Koch Arena. We can meet the needs mm-hmm. of our student athletes. When we don't, we're going to struggle. And the way that I look at this changing dynamic now, and there's some discomfort in this. The way that I look at this is, if full arenas are funding your athletic department operations, which they are, then it's going to require elite level talent and coaches on the floors and the courts and the fields in order to fill those arenas. And so you have to prioritize people first. You've got to get elite level people that can win championships first. Then you're going to fill your arenas and your stadiums, and then you're going to be able to fund championship level programs across the American Athletic Conference and our 16 sport programs. So that's the way you look at it. At the end of the day, man, it's risky. Yeah, there's still some risk in it.
So that still is job one for an athletic director, is to hire the right people and making sure they're bringing in the right people.
I would share this with you. I asked my mentor, Mitch Barnhart, who's at Kentucky. I asked him somewhere in that 2010-11 range. I'd been working for him for 4 years at that point. I asked Rob Mullins, who was a deputy AD, he's now at Oregon, and I asked Mitch, listen, when you're building an organization, where do you start? I mean, in 2003, when Mitch took over at Kentucky, they weren't fully funded from a scholarship standpoint. Can you imagine
Amazing.
That?
Yeah.
They weren't fully funded from a number of coaches standpoint. If you can have two assistant coaches in soccer, they had one. Mm-hmm. And so he walked through that and he said, you know what? I will always prioritize people first over stuff and things. Stuff and things being facilities. And he was right. They fully funded scholarships. They fully funded coaching positions. They got the right coaches in those positions, getting the right people in the right seats on the bus. And then they invested in facilities. And it wasn't until 2012, 13, 14 that began, for me, an 8-year run of $250 million in capital construction on our facilities. But it was a solid 10 years of getting the right people in the right spots and investing in the people first before you do that. And I truly believe that's the way you have to go. Like when you move from one town to another and you're looking for a church home, yeah, you can go to church in the Taj Mahal, but at the end of the day, the value of your experience is going to be based on the people that are there and the people that you believe in and the people that you want to be a part of and associate yourself with is much stronger than the building.
Right.
Itself. So I think there's certainly some validity in that.
I'm not sure whether to ask you what you would like to see happen in NIL upcoming or what you foresee happening. And are they the same thing?
Yep.
What do you see? What has to happen, do you think, from a logical and logistical standpoint?
I think what I would like to see is more transparency so that we truly know what we're competing against. I would like to see, and this will be a real challenge for our industry, I would like to be able to put a fence around the wrongdoers, right, that are not speaking truth to young people and persuading them in a what I would determine as a pretty devious way. We're not going to do that at Wichita State. And because we're not going to do that at Wichita State, it might put us at a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to see that piece addressed. There is tremendous amount of tampering that goes on. The NCAA doesn't have subpoena power, so they're not going to acquire phone records and text message records. But that there's tampering going on all the time. We know for a fact there are institutions that are reaching out to our baseball players right now. We know for a fact that there are institutions that were reaching out to our men's basketball players in January and February.
Mm-hmm.
And we say it somewhat in jest, but I think it's probably happened around the country where there's probably been conversations and handshake lines after the game.
Wow.
We got to put a fence around that. Because at the end of the day, we're all investing so much in the development of young people and programs that for it to be that easily dismantled is a challenge. So anyway, I'd like to see that, whether that we can get to that or not. Here's what I do think is going to happen in the next 6 months in the NIL space. Athletic departments are going to be given more flexibility and freedom in the NIL landscape. And what do I mean by that? That I think they're going to be able to do everything just short of collecting the dollars from a vendor and distributing them to the student athlete. Okay. I think we're going to be able to, I use this word carefully, represent, not in the legal sense, but I do think we're going to be able to put opportunities in front of student athletes. NIL opportunities where we haven't been able to do that in the past. I think we're going to be more active in connecting that. So what does that mean for athletics? Well, it's a couple of things. We have an arm of what we do is sponsorship, advertisements, multimedia rights. So you've seen it. We spell sell print, radio, TV, ads, digital, electronic, all those things. Well, who's to say that we couldn't start connecting student athletes to those opportunities and driving some more dollars through sponsorship and advertising and routing them to our student athletes? That's a that's a pretty simple way to go about that. The other way to go about that is when you get to the spot where you've got NIL as budget lines, we can fundraise for it. We can fundraise for it now, and we are, and those dollars are going to the Wheat Shot Collective. But I think what you'll see is athletic departments now incorporating NIL donations into their priority point system for priority ticket allotments, postseason ticket allotments. If you ever get to the spot where you're reseeding an arena, then that priority rank order plays a huge part in that. So those are the two things that I think are probably coming. And then we got to get to a disclosure. And the last piece that I would really like to see is some sort of a registration for the agents that are representing these young people in NIL discussions, because there's a whole wave of junior agents, some of them qualified, some of them not, that are just looking to make a quick buck. And I have heard and I've seen student athletes getting ridiculous contracts from these agents where they're asking for 20, 25, 30% of NIL dollars. Well, these young people don't know that when you enter into a professional contract is just say, let's just say Ja Morant. I was at Murray State with Ja Morant. You're going to make a decision between an agency that's going to charge you anywhere from 3 to 7%. And so we've got these agents that are in this 20 to 30% on NIL is
just ripping off kids.
Ridiculous. Yeah. And at the end of the day, they're ripping off kids.
Yeah. I want to touch on one other thing before we go. You said in a letter to supporters recently that, you have this system, I'm not sure what it's called, I forget the name, but it's a system where you survey your own student athletes, 250 student athletes each semester, and you're able to see what they like, what they don't like, what is great, what is not great in their eyes, and then compare it to peer institutions. Talk about that and what specifically you get out of it as an athletic director.
Well, I appreciate you asking that, and I'll warn the listeners, buckle your seatbelts here because this is a lot of information. But if you walk away from this part of the conversation with anything, walk away from it with this. This is the first time in my 26 years that I've seen a mechanism that allows us to quantitatively measure the student athlete's perception of their experience and then compare it to peers so we can actually benchmark what we're doing at Wichita State. I think that's amazing, and it's something that we will continue to do because, as I mentioned, our mission is to develop young people and programs through first-class service. So doing things like this helps us get to that first-class service. And the other important piece here, Kirk, is we have to know that our student athletes are in a experience that they value and desire, because that's the way that you combat the transfer portal. We need young people in our program that know they're valued as people, not as stats and wins and numbers, but as people. We need young people in our program that know that they're developing and getting better as students, person, players, and ultimately professionals. And then we need young people that recognize that their experience at Wichita State is a good one. And so this tool allows us to do that. We basically ask Every semester we do a survey with all of our student athletes. We have about 260 of them. So we've started doing it in the fall of 22 when I got here. We did one in the spring of 23, and then we did one in the fall of 23. So what we did kind of arbitrarily is we aggregated the fall of 22 and spring of 23 data, that first academic year, mm-hmm. and we came up with quantitative numbers for these questions that we asked. Most of them are a 0 to 5 Likert scale. And then we compared that to the fall of 23. So we wanted to see the delta. What was the change? Was it going down? Was it the same? Was it going up? To help educate us on investing strategically in their experience. And so we asked questions, 40 different questions, centered around athletics department support. So in that bucket, it was like strength and conditioning, academic support, athletic training, nutrition, time demands, mental health, all those things. Institution, evaluate institution, academics, housing, social scene, evaluate your team. The coaching staff, cultures, values, facilities, fan support, gear, individual improvement, development, team chemistry, all those areas. And then we asked them to evaluate their head coach and their position coaches, which and they looked at areas like care, character, coaching style, communication, fairness. Okay, so 40 different questions. And then so what we did is we saw an 82% response rate with our 250 student athletes for the 22-23. Year, and then we saw a 73% response rate this past fall. So for folks that are listening, that's a significant response rate on any kind of a survey that you would do. So here are the results. We basically combined what areas did we see improvement from 22-23 to the fall of 23. So we made a column of all the areas that got better. We made a column of the areas that stayed the same, and then we made a column of the areas that went down. So that you can start to see. We assess the delta between the score in 22-23 to the fall of 23 so we could see what kind of percentage change that looked at, the magnitude of the change. And then what's really impressive is I think we were able to then benchmark our score to the scores, the average scores of the 100 peers, 40 of which are Power 5 that compete at the highest level. So 60 mid to low majors and 40 Power 5 institutions. And so that's the benchmark that we were comparing ourselves to. And it is a really long list of increased values. There are 33 of the 40 values are above that peer group average. So our student athletes think highly of their experience at Wichita State. We may see areas like athletic training that were below the peer group average in 22-23 are now above the peer group average for the fall of 23. The same can be said for mental health resources. Our student athletes think very highly of the head coaches that are here. We rank above the peer group average in care, character, coaching style, communication, 16% above the peer group average in fairness, 15% above the peer group average in honesty. Our student athletes think a lot of the people mm-hmm. that are leading our programs.
Let me stop you there, because we write so many business stories about the youth and, you know, college graduates coming into the workforce, and it's a different kind of generation because they really care about how they're going to be treated in the workplace. Does that carry over to athletics in an athletic department as well?
I think it absolutely does. If you're asking people, whether they're young people or they're 20-year professionals, to perform at an elite level, they've got to feel good about the environment that they're in. They've got to feel good about the leadership within their environment. And you've got to be able to remove all those obstacles for elite performance. So I think it's really important. And this is something that we will do regularly. So we will do a spring of 24, and we'll likely just combine it with the fall of 23 mm-hmm. so that we'll have a 22-23 score, and then we'll have a 23-24 score, and then we'll compare those. But we'll do different combinations, because at the end of the day, what we need to focus on is to make sure that we accentuate and educate our student athletes. Mm-hmm. Hey, you guys think really highly of your program, and we've walked through this with our student athlete advisory committee. I want you guys to understand how far above the peer group average you are in areas like athletic training, overall experience. Would you recommend or refer other student athletes to be student athletes at Wichita State? They're 38% above the peer group average there. Individual development, travel, facilities are above the peer group average. You guys need to understand you're in a pretty good spot, according to you, not according to us. And so I think this data is really important, and we'll continue to accentuate it. But there's areas where we can improve, right? And so there were five areas where we actually saw a decrease in the rating. And so we asked our student athlete advisory committee specifically about those areas. And we can now drill down into the elements of those areas. So like one was nutrition. It only went down 5%, and it's only 3% below the peer group average. But we specifically asked, what is that? And it basically boils down to, we do about $120,000-$130,000 in supplements and snacks and granola bars and all those things in our weight rooms, training rooms, locker rooms, and there's ample stuff there. We don't do a student-athlete-wide training table, which is pretty common in our industry. And that's where that, according to our student-athletes, that's where that score resulted from. Institutional social scene is an area that we'll continue to work on, whether that's can be supplemented in areas like Braeburn Square, where you've got some really nice establishments there that people can gather, or a restaurant retail plan development on 17th and Hillside. So we'll address those. Then there's some team chemistry elements there, which I thought was interesting, and I specifically asked our student athletes about that. And it's basically the variables that contribute to the roster churn that results from the transfer portal. Mm-hmm. And so we'll do some monthly captains and emerging leaders elements where we get our captains and emerging leaders together, and we talk about how do you build trust and credibility. And there's a great chapter in the book by Sam Walker. The book is The Captain Class. And Walker talks about credibility as a currency, and how do you earn it? How do you earn credibility? Well, there's a dozen different ways to earn credibility. And then how do you spend it? Because it's not unlimited. And you have to have credibility in the bank to be able to spend it. Because if you try to spend it when you don't have it, it doesn't go anywhere. And so anyway, it's lessons like that that I think we need to do a better job of building across the department. But at any rate, this tool is really powerful, and it's valuable, and it helps direct our work and our resources.
And we talked beforehand. I asked if it asks any NIL questions, and you said no. And I think that's probably a good thing, because NIL changes every semester anyway. So who knows? You can't probably compare a year and a half ago to now.
It does. And for the most part, our young people will ask, hey, can I get more NIL opportunities? And so you think about that. Like Sydney McKinney, she went out and got NIL opportunities. And that's what NIL was intended to be.
Right.
It wasn't intended to be a handout.
Right.
It has become that through the recruiting and the retention piece, particularly with the inducements and some of the tampering components. But there is some work that needs to be done on the student athlete side on this thing, because it's not strictly a handout. There has to be service rendered. There has to be documented and all those things. So I think that piece is interesting. Coach Green told a funny story at a small intimate baseball gathering that we did, talking about NIL with some donors there. And he said, you know, I had a young person that come in and said, hey, I really would like to get more NIL opportunities. And certainly we walked through what opportunities exist and trying to guide the young person into doing more. We also need to focus on what we're doing in the classroom and trying to hit a 2-2 breaking ball. So it can be a distraction if you allow it to be. But for the most part, I think our student athletes are doing a great job with it.
It's fascinating to watch the changing landscape from afar. Yeah. But Kevin, I sure appreciate the time. Thanks so much. And we'll do this again when there's been a lot more NIL changes.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for having us on, Kirk. We really appreciate it. And go Shockers.
That's it for Biz Talk this week, episode 361. Check out all our podcast episodes at our Biz Talk Hub. That's at WichitaBusinessJournal.com. We thank you for listening and for subscribing. Biz Talk, as always, is a production of the Wichita Business Journal. Thanks very much to our sponsor from day one, Equity Bank. Creating the business concept turned out to be the easy part. The challenges that follow is where Equity Bank comes in. Equity Bank was built by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Let them help your business evolve and solve your challenges. Tomorrow is here. Visit them today at equitybank.com/evolve. Be well and be safe. Have a profitable week.